This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants the story behind the book. And boy, oh boy, do we have a good story behind the book I'm going to be talking about right now. I got exhausted just reading this book. It is so interesting. And I'm so happy to welcome Mary Ann Boer to Joy on Paper. And the name of her book is The 20, One Woman's Trek Across Corsica on the GR20 Trail. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi, good morning.
Whoa, I got tired. I don't know how you did this trek. I mean, it is incredible.
Thank you.
Amazing. And then you get to write this wonderful book because you are a very observant walker. You don't just walk, you also notice everything. My goodness gracious. I mean, I would be chugging along, breathing hard.
I wouldn't care about anything.
But you're looking at nature and you're looking at trees and you're looking at, and you're noticing things, which is what makes this such a fun book.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, it's one way to take your mind off of, you know, what your lungs and your legs feel like. Just looking around and trying to, you know, remember what you're seeing and doing.
Well, tell the people what this trek is and where it is. Of course, most people I don't think could find Europe on a map. Let alone Corsica. And most of the people who are going to be interviewing you for this great book have never been to Corsica, but I have.
That's right, yeah. Oh, you have?
Because...
Oh, wonderful.
I am a Napoleon nut. I have over 200 books about Napoleon.
Oh, my goodness.
Going all the way back, I think one of my books is 1820 is my oldest Napoleon book. So you can imagine that I had to make that journey.
You had to go to his birthplace, yes.
Yeah, I had to. But I had been obsessed with Napoleon since I was a kid. I could travel all over Europe. All I had to do was tell my husband there was a battlefield, and he would take me. And then when I said, I want to go to Corsica, I need to go to Corsica. I have to be there. We had a wonderful time, but I must say we traveled first class in those days. You took a whole different attitude. So first, tell everybody, how long is this trail?
Well, it's 124 miles, which might not seem so daunting if it's just, you know, a straightaway, but it involved, you know, pretty much every day going up to the peak of a mountain or a pass and then coming all the way down and then doing it again for 2 weeks.
So how many people try this trail every year?
You know, I have that stat in my book, and I believe it's 18,000, but only about 50% actually complete it. They have every intention of completing it, but they just don't. They don't. So
this is not your first book about trekking. Obviously, this is something you've been doing a long time. So tell us the start of it, and then how you started trekking, and about the book that you wrote about your gap year, too.
Yeah, well, I started trekking just because I've always loved the outdoors. Even as a kid, I loved being, you know, in the forests and in the woods, exploring with my siblings. My husband and I did some serious hikes when we were in our early 20s. And then we did mostly day hikes while we were raising our children. And then once, you know, we had an empty nest, we really started picking it up again in terms of more difficult and longer treks. So... yeah, we'd always done, you know, a lot of day hikes with our kids, and we took them along once they were in their late teens for longer treks. But that's how it all started, and we really felt the need to mark significant milestones in our lives with doing something adventurous, and oftentimes that involved doing long hikes. The gap year that we took was something that we promised ourselves we'd do, when we were about 23, we weren't married yet, but we knew we'd be married, and we and if we were, if we had kids, we promised ourselves we will do a year of traveling. We'll just take a gap year. We'll quit our jobs, because we'd done it when right after college. We did a good 2 month trip, backpacking trip through Europe, and we said this can't be all there is. We have to promise that we'll do it again.
And here you are, well, you're approaching 60, and most people are thinking about retirement, sitting on a porch and putting their feet up.
Right.
And who got this idea? Which one of you said, oh, whoa, let's go?
Well, you know, it actually happened at the same time. I would say I'm usually a little bit more of a risk taker. But we, during our gap year, we met a retired British general, a big, very fit man, who, when he heard we were doing the Tour de Mont Blanc, which is about an 8-day trek around the base of and the foothills of Mont Blanc, he said, "Oh, if you guys can do this, and if you enjoy it, you have to do the 20 on Corsica." And I'd never heard of the 20 before. Of course, I knew about Corsica, but I'm a Francophile, and have been for a very long time. And I knew about the GR system, which in French, really, the words Grande Randonnée really mean big hike. And so we said to ourselves, we'll do the GR20. I mean, the general told us we should do it, so we have to listen to him. So yeah, but I'm usually more the driving force behind these adventures, and my husband almost always says, "Sure, let's do it."
So. Well, any hike, of course, is also a logistic problem. You have so many things to plan, what you're taking, the research in advance, and of course, in your case, you also decided to join a group as opposed to just doing it yourself. So tell us how that came about.
Well, we're great trekkers, but we had heard how difficult the GR20 was. And we heard that in many cases, it isn't even a trail. You're just scrambling over rocks for a mile or two. And so the trail isn't super well marked in places. And the last thing we wanted to do at 60 years old was get lost. So we just decided, let's just do it so we can enjoy it and not stress about finding the trail, staying on the trail. And so, yes, we went with a group and a guide.
Well, and I think it's better if you get injured out there by yourself, and there's only two of you, it's always like, I don't want you to leave me alone and go and look for help.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I've been on a little walk like that, and something happened, and I really did not like that I had to be the one to take off, and my girlfriend fell. And I had to go and leave her, and I didn't know what, you know, I never did that again.
Sure, that's scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's scary. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
How did you meet up with your group? How did they, tell us about how many were there, and tell us about, there are different dynamics once you're working with a group.
There are absolutely dynamics, yes, and thank goodness, for the most part, everything with our group was really good. We had a French guide. And there were, so the whole group was 8, including the guide. There were 2 women, and there were 5 men, and we were from the United States. We were the only ones living in the United States. There were other folks from Britain, and an American living in Ireland, and a man from the Netherlands. And we ranged in age from about 35 to 70. So there was a quite a range there. I guess our guide was 36 and had done the hike, dozens of times. We got along really well, and I was thrilled when I found out there was another woman. And we hit it off really well. We're still in touch. We're still friends. And my husband Joe found one gentleman from England who he, again, really hit it off well with. But everyone, we ate dinner and breakfast and lunch and everything together, and shared a lot of laughs and stories, and it was great camaraderie.
How did you get to the island?
Well, we actually went to Iceland first, and then we went to the south of France to do a month of training before. We'd done lots of training in the months prior in the U.S., but we did some serious hikes in Iceland, got to the south of France in the Alps just above Nice, and, you know, into the mountains there. We did many hikes, and then we took the ferry from Nice over to Bastia, Corsica. And for some reason, it just always seems that when we approach a place by ship, I don't know, there's something just, it enhances the anticipation and the romanticism and all that. We were so happy we chose that way to get there. And then after the hike, we stayed in Corsica for about a week to rest, took the ferry over to Italy, and then did some traveling over there. So again, just by ship, is our preferred means of travel. But it was, you know, there's daily ferries that go to the island.
We flew in on a private airplane. Now, our trip was, I will tell you, we were going first class. So we lived it up for the time that we were there. It was just wonderful. I enjoyed, of course, being in Corsica because of Napoleon, and because I'm very, very knowledgeable, I was able to speak to them, and of course they loved all of that.
Right? Yeah, so, I bet.
Oh, I mean, yeah. It was just so much fun. How did you feel about the Corsican people, and what was your interaction with them when you started the trip and during the trip?
You know, I wish we had the opportunity to interact more, but it was pretty much just in the before the hike in an inn that we stayed in, and then after we treated ourselves to a really nice hotel for 3 days of rest. So we interacted with Corsicans then. We met a couple on the trail. And I met one when I went off by myself in a restaurant, and they were absolutely lovely. And because I speak French, it was most Corsicans also speak French besides Corsican, and some Italian. So I was able to converse with them, and they were lovely. But I know in their culture and their nature and what they're taught. I mean, they're very, as I'm sure you know, they are very independent, and they consider themselves Corsican, and you just really, if you really push them, they'll say they're also French. But they like to think that they're, they're very independent. And Corsica really does have its very own culture.
Oh, definitely. And you're right. You just keep calling them Corsican, and you'll always get a second helping of everything.
Yes.
And free drinks. The food is extraordinary. Well, what did you eat on the trail? How much did you carry poundage-wise of each of you?
Poundage-wise, our packs were about 35 pounds. I mean, we really stripped down to the basics. You know, we had essentially two hiking outfits that we would alternate, because at the end of each day we'd wash them on and, you know, have it dry. We had a little something, I had a little sundress. My husband had a pair of shorts, you know, for evening when we were having dinner. Very basic dinners, very simple dinners, but they were absolutely delicious. Some of them were Corsican specialties, like veal stew, and we had a lot of bread and desserts, simple desserts, but made with chestnut flour, because there are chestnut trees all over the island. We had a lot of pasta with, you know, fresh vegetables mixed in. So kind of just high carb, stick to your ribs kind of food. And there was always wine and beer.
That's true. I think it's so inspirational what you did. And I love very much the quote that you have right in the front of the book. And it's really something I've been talking to people a lot about. One of the things, of course, I've been happy that in many ways Joy on Paper has been great for authors, because not only do I get to review their books, but I also encourage listeners. And quite a few of my listeners have written books now, and many participated in NaNoWriMo. They're starting to realize that it's so great to leave a record behind for yourself, for your children, for your great-grandchildren 100 years from now. Everybody's always looking now for DNA, where they came from. But if you write a book, I mean, you're leaving something solid. Also, just the attitude of not giving up, of actually getting out there and doing something with your life. I like very much how you wrote about Dylan Thomas. What did he say?
Dylan Thomas, let me see, the one that was in the very beginning of the book, you know, to rage against the dying of the light.
Don't go gently into the night. Fight it. Fight it, man. Get out there. And do something.
Exactly.
And that's what people have to do, because there are too many people who are retiring. That's not the way to go. Get out there and do something. Live your life. Have fun.
Right.
I mean, you guys at 60, most people would, I mean, teenagers wouldn't do this trek. You know,
it's all about your passions. You know, I think that in many cases, the things that you loved as a young person, sometimes you have to give them up in the middle of your life when you're, you know, in your building your career, working hard at your job, raising your children, you know, being on the PTA board, whatever. And then when you have some time back to yourself, discover those passions, whatever they be, whether it's hiking or painting or, I don't know, scuba diving. You know, why not continue? I mean, you now have time, so you have to, like you said, go live life. But discover sometimes it's like remember what those passions were.
And grab on and do something. I love blacksmithing. Get out there and go to a blacksmith and learn how to make things, you know, with iron. And boy, it makes you feel so good. And you're so proud of yourself when you make these beautiful things out of iron.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, use your creativity, use your energy, use your brain. And it's also a good way to meet people.
In your case, you've made friends, and friends that you have something to share, and a lived experience, which is always fun.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and for those who want to write about it, the great thing, you know, about whatever the passion is, the great thing is that you kind of get to relive it all.
Yeah.
You know, if you write about blacksmithing or whatever that activity is, you really get to think about it and why you love it, and you get to just, even if you're not doing it, you're writing about it, so you're re-experiencing it.
And you get to share it with people, too, because you can go and do book events, book signings, talk to ladies' clubs and sports clubs.
Right.
And just have fun. Again, you meet more people, and you have a more interesting life, because I'm sure there are so many organizations that would love you to be a speaker, because you are an inspiration.
Right. I mean, people are interested to hear what other people are doing, and it can light a spark.
I would recommend to all women's clubs, invite Marianne Boer,
right,
and she will not bore you, because she's got a heck of a story to tell, an exciting story about the 20. It's one woman's trek across Corsica on the GR20, and you are such a good writer. I love the way that you write. I love your observations. Very, very fine writing.
Oh, thank you so much. That makes me so happy.
And I think you've had a lot of fun with this. And I hope, what's your next big thing?
Well, our next big hike is, this time next year, we're doing the coast to coast across England. It's a well-marked route. And we walk somewhere between 10 and 15 miles a day. We're taking our dog with us, and we are staying in inns along the way. We're not camping this time. We're going to be a little bit more comfy.
And you will be drinking a lot of beer along the way.
That's right. Exactly. Okay. Hopefully the inns will be right above a pub.
Oh, they always are. Absolutely. Okay. Yes, well, yes. Marianne, you have a website?
I do. It's www.marianneboer.com. No middle initial C, just marianneboer.com.
B-O-H-R, okay? She's not a B-O-A-R or a B-O-R-E. She is a B-O-H-R.
I hope that. Exactly.
Really,
exactly.
Really a fine book. It's called The 20. People get this book. It's a great read. It's inspirational. And Marianne, you're inspirational. And we'll have you back here after you finish that trek across England, okay?
There you go. Okay. Thank you so much.
I look forward to it. Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye. Good talking to you.
Bye-bye. Great. Bye. Ooh, whoa. Now that is doing something. Everybody, have a wonderful day. Bye-bye now.